Texting allows patients to access the system quickly. Accessing our system quickly is a real challenge right now, right? You call the office, you make an appointment. That appointment may not be for a couple of weeks. You might play phone tag back and forth with people. So quick, efficient access is a problem in our system.
Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytané and Tsingtian First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. One of the defining features of using quality improvement methodology to address a complex quality problem is that the best solution may not reveal itself until after you've thoroughly defined and investigated your problem. What's more, that solution can sometimes take you in a completely different direction than you were expecting. Today, we're talking about improving pediatric diabetes care and how, in seeking better care for her patients, today's guest discovered a paradigm shift in the way we can deliver high-quality, technology-driven, patient-centered care for patients with chronic disease. Our guest today is Dr. Eiko Wider, a pediatrician based in Vernon, BC, who you may also recognize as the recent co-host for our special podcast series on the Romano Report. Welcome back, Eiko. It's great to have you join us again.
Always a pleasure, Cher, to spend time with you. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, as with all our guests, I'm going to ask you to maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and your career journey through to your current practice.
Sure. I was born in Japan, actually. And when I was 1 year old, my mother brought me over to join my father, who was postdocing at the University of Chicago, which is actually where my sister was born. And from there, we moved across the United States, up into Canada, and then eventually to Edmonton. So growing up, I actually changed schools every year until I was in grade 9. I was the new kid on the block every year, having to make a new best friend. And I remember when I was 12 years old, my father said, "And this year we're moving to Rome." So we actually moved to Rome, Italy for a year. And I thought, I am not moving to Rome. It's bad enough that I have to change schools, but I am not moving countries. So I actually ran away. I packed a suitcase and I ran away. And I went to my piano teacher's house and said, "I'm staying here. I'm not going to do any piano, but I'm staying here at your house for a year." But of course, I did move to Rome. And I went to Italian school. And I also did correspondence. And it was a really, really wonderful experience. I finished university at the University of Alberta, where I did my medical school. I'm dating myself. And at the time, I did a rotating internship at St. Paul's Hospital. Rotating internships no longer exist. And it was at that time that I realized that it was pediatrics that I wanted to do. I had initially planned on doing a straight in internal medicine, but thought I should maybe take this opportunity to do a rotating internship. And it was getting to see the odd pediatric patient who had come through the doors of St. Paul's Hospital, which is a downtown hospital. And it just made me so happy. And I thought, I think this is where I need to go. So I completed my residency at BC Children's Hospital. I had a wonderful experience, started my leadership role as chief resident in my final year, and had an opportunity to sit down on a monthly basis with the chief of pediatrics and really started thinking about sort of systems. And then I came to work in Vernon with the expectation and the plan that I was going to go back to BC Children's Hospital after 5 years, but I never did. And I continued to live and enjoy the traditional lands of the Siksika people in beautiful Vernon.
That's a great story. That's fantastic. And you know what? A little sojourn in Italy, you know,
that's right.
Sounds wonderful, even if you didn't really want to go in the first place.
That's right.
It's surprising how many of our guests have actually some sort of periods of their lives abroad in different countries and different jurisdictions. It's much more common than you think, I think, in our profession. Let's get back to your current position and tell us about your clinic in Vernon, and where this improvement work was based, and who's on your team and who makes up your patients.
Right. So I'm a consulting general pediatrician, so I have a private practice outside of the hospital. But the work related to this improvement project is based out of Vernon Jubilee Hospital, which is part of Interior Health. And the diabetes clinic itself serves adults with type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, as well as gestational diabetic patients. And pediatric patients is a subset of this larger clinic. So it really is a small part, and we serve about 100 patients. Interestingly, Cher, the incidence is rising by about 3%, and it's highest in Interior Health and Northern Health for some reason when you look at the statistics throughout British Columbia. We have the clinic has about 1.5 to 2 nurses and one dietitian. And I would say that amongst our pediatric patients, 90% of our clients are on continuous glucose monitoring devices, as well as insulin pumps. So we have a very high uptake on technology in our clinic.
And so, turning to your quality work, tell us about the problem you identified, which started off this quality improvement journey.
So it actually started about 8 years ago. Our diabetes clinic was not a very nice place to work. And what I mean by that is that our patients and our families complained a lot about the care they were receiving. Our no-show rate was high, and our clinicians had quite low job satisfaction. We had quite a high turnover rate. And as pediatricians providing diabetes care in this clinic, it was a perpetual source of unhappiness and low joy, let's put it that way. And so there was a real gap between care as it was and care as we imagined it or hoped it to be. And we surveyed our patients. The feedback was hard to listen to hear. It was hard. But we felt that this was a gap that we really needed to spend some time thinking about and putting some energy towards. And that ultimately became my level 3 action learning project for my PQI cohort training in Interior Health.
And so how did you as part of your PQI training, they give you this education in quality improvement methodology. So how did you set about investigating your problem, and how did this improvement project evolve?
I would say that I really did adhere quite closely to the quality improvement methodology. So I really thought about Deming's system of profound knowledge. And we, first of all, really wanted to understand our system. So Deming talks about the need to really understand all the very com various components that contribute to care. So although it was very hard to align everyone's schedules, we brought people together for an all-day process mapping session in the basement of Vernon Jubilee Hospital. And we brought together the pediatricians, the nurses, the dietitians, the admin assistants. We had my operational dyad partner. We had patient partners. We had two parents who came, and quality improvement consultant. And we mapped out the patient journey, and we also mapped out the various lanes for the care providers. And we had post-it notes up. We had, pieces of paper taped to the wall. It was a very active session, very engaging, lots of conversation, a tremendous amount of energy and excitement. People felt like they were actually doing something, and that was very, very encouraging. And then we started talking about what are the opportunities for improvement. And I would say there were probably about 50 change ideas that were posted.
Wow.
And it was quite humbling to think, wow, there are about 50 things that we need to improve on and 50 things that we could change, possibly work on. And it was quite overwhelming when I first looked at it. But then we put it into an impact effort matrix. So what was high impact, but low effort, high impact, high effort. And from there, we sort of, took a look at our ideas, and then we co-created a driver diagram, and that became a roadmap for improvement. And we had I put together the draft based on the information that we learned from the process mapping day, and then we had everyone edit the driver diagram. And we continue to use the driver diagram as an active map of how we're doing, and we change things. So that's been really, really valuable. And we tried, several different change ideas for different primary and secondary drivers. But the one that we have been working on for the last 5 years has been this change idea of using texting, leveraging texting to deliver ambulatory pediatric type 1 diabetes care.
Why don't you tell us about how you came up with that and how did you implement it?
There are a number of things that sort of urged us on to try this. The International Society for Pediatric and Adolescent Diabetes provides a very extensive set of guidelines. And in the section on ambulatory care, they actually mentioned texting as an option for communication. So we thought, well, ISPAD has endorsed this. And then I knew that there was a pediatric cardiology clinic at BC Children's Hospital that was using this for certain patient populations. And I had heard that it was very user-friendly and that the clinicians also liked it and the patients really liked it. And then, of course, COVID came along. And COVID was probably the real impetus. So we were trying to pivot very quickly during that time. We were being discouraged to admit patients to hospital. We had to deliver this care virtually. So how are we going to provide care to newly diagnosed type 1 diabetic patients if we weren't going to admit them to hospital? Set up a proof of concept project after my cohort training. And when I first presented it to our diabetes team, they said, "We have too much going on, Aiko. There is no way we are trying to cope with the pan, you know, the virtual health and all these things related. We cannot possibly take on more." So I said, "That's fine." And so I set up the project. I had a charter, I had an aim statement, I had a measurement, I had a family of measures. And I chose a software the same software platform that was being used at BC Children's Hospital. And I invited teenagers. And I chose this group in particular because I like teenagers, first of all. I think they're wonderful. The second thing is that I did not need to teach them how to text because they're very good at it. And they could consent themselves. And so it was a very easy population to work with. And I enrolled 17 patients, and I monitored the platform myself. And I found it very easy. I was very surprised to see how engaged the teenagers were. The weekly check-in message goes out at noon every Monday. And I was surprised to see how many teenagers would respond to that check-in message within a minute, right? And so during the course of this project, I actually monitored the response rate, and the response rate was over 70% on weekly check-in messages for a year. And at the end of the project, 10 out of the 17 youth had not aged out, and they all asked to stay on. They still wanted to text the clinical team. So I figure if a teenager wants to do something, there must be some value in it, right? That was my thinking. Right? Teenagers are very quick to say, "This is not of value to me." So I thought that was very useful feedback. And so that was my proof of concept. So I thought, well, if teenagers like it, I wonder if other clients, other patients in our clinic would also like it. And our parents and caregivers were very excited. They were very excited to want to try this. And so we onboarded parents and then eventually children down to about age 10 years. With parental consent, for the 10-year-old for sure. The results again were very, very supportive. They were very happy to be texting us. And so with that endorsement from both patients and parents and our clinicians, we then created a change package thinking maybe other people will want to know what we were doing. And then we had heard through the grapevine that other families in other clinics in Interior Health were saying, "Well, why do the families in Vernon just get to do this? Why can't we do this?" So we thought, okay, maybe there's some pull. So we sent out an expression of interest document and slide deck to the other clinics, and we had three other clinics in Interior Health Central say that they wanted to do this. So that was Kamloops, and then Kelowna, and then Penticton. So then it became a spread project, and we used BT, breakthrough series collaborative methodology in a modified way.
I'm interested to know there was re really positive uptake from the patients, from the patient's family. What were they saying to you about what the impact on them and the benefit that they were deriving from being able to communicate with you in this way?
So, getting that qualitative feedback, understanding what patients wanted and needed was very, very important to us. We created a patient and family advisory committee, a PFAC. So we were getting active, regular feedback from our PFAC committee. As well, we sent surveys out at the beginning, at the end to say, how is communication baseline and how is communication with texting? And our survey response at the end was over 30%, which I think is pretty good for a survey. And 100% of our respondents said that they could not imagine care without texting. And 97% of them said that that texting has helped them manage their diabetes. And then we also surveyed our clinicians. If it's not good for the providers, that's not, it's not going to be sustained. And so our clinicians, 100% of them said, why wouldn't we want to text them? We want to meet our patients where they are. So that was really, really positive feedback. And qualitatively, our clinicians were saying, we feel more connected with our patients. We feel like we know them better. And so that was really useful feedback to get from both, our families and our clinicians.
So this solution of using texting, in some ways, it's actually introduced a fundamental shift in the way care can be delivered by leveraging this technology, and a bit of a move away from, say, the traditional provider models that most people will be familiar with in terms of outpatient clinics and regular visits. So how have you and your team found that shift? Because I can imagine there are going to be some people with concerns out there about, opening up floodgates of communication and being inundated with texts at times when you need to concentrate or perhaps you're with another patient. I mean, how have people found that shift?
Oh, absolutely. You've hit upon a very key initial resistance. There's concern, and rightly so, about capacity. Our clinicians and our frontline workers are being asked increasingly to do more with no more, or sometimes even less. And so they said, we can't possibly introduce another communication modality. We already have emails, we have phone calls, we have in-person, we have virtual meeting, virtual appointments. This is just one more thing. It's too much. Our clinicians were saying, well, we're actually inviting patients to come rather than sitting back passively waiting for them to come. It was a very different model of care, right? We're inviting them into our space rather than passively waiting. And they said, we can't afford, we can't manage to invite more people, more work in. We're already inundated with work. But what we did was we actually asked our clinicians to keep track of their time. So their time spent texting, their time spent documenting the texting advice within the EHR of Interior Health, as well as any clinical work that resulted as a result of the texting communication. And when we tallied it up, it was only 60 plus additional minutes per week for the clinic. And we did this without, Vernon Jubilee Hospital Clinic, we had a 15% increase in patient volume, and we had no additional overtime. We had no additional FTE, and there was no wait time for our patients. So this was all absorbed by being more nimble with texting. Texting allows patients to access the system quickly. Accessing our system quickly is a real challenge right now, right? You call the office, you make an appointment. That appointment might may not be for a couple of weeks. You might play phone tag back and forth with people. So quick, efficient access is a problem in our system. And what we've discovered that there are different types of access or information that patients want, and we call them soft, medium, and hard touches. And so a soft touch for us is something like, am I doing the right thing here? It's like a quick yes or no, or, is my appointment, today at 2 p.m.? Yes, it is, right? And a medium touch might be, I need a letter to attend camp so I can take my supplies. It might be, can you fill out a special authority form for me? Yes, I can do that. And then a hard touch are the ones that require a bit more time and thinking, right? Looking at the continuous glucose monitoring profiles, for example. And reflecting on maybe some insulin dose adjustments that need to be done in the pump settings. So those are what we call hard touches. And so in medicine right now, in healthcare, we think about care as being quite a uniform thing, right? But I actually think that the way we triage and think about care is also something that we've really learned from this project, is that all care is not the same. So it's really made us think about how we deliver care, what kind of things is it that patients need from us, and really turning it around, and really focusing on patient needs.
I have one more question for you, Eiko. This is fantastic work, and it's really driven, and you've seen improvements in patient-centered care, in efficiency. And I'd love to know how what you learned through this project, through PQI. How have you been personally affected by this successful quality improvement work, and what have you learned through the PQI program?
I would say that the PQI program saved my professional career because I was going to leave medicine around this time. But taking the PQI training gave me agency. It made me realize that there are tools that I can use that are different than my clinical tools to help improve the care that I deliver to my patients. That there are systems things that I can contribute with my clinical knowledge and the QI methodology to really improve that delivery. And so that's been a really, really rewarding part of my professional life. And I would say, I know healthcare is a challenging space to be in right now, but I would say I'm the happiest now in my professional career than I've ever been.
Wow, that's fantastic. And everyone benefits in that case, right? You benefit, your patients benefit, the health authority and the hospital benefits. So it's great to hear that actually. And it's wonderful to get a shout out for the program as well. At the same time, you're a real poster child for the program, I have to say, particularly with your methodology and your successful outcomes. So thank you. You've been listening to Dr. Eiko Wider talking about how patient text messaging can improve pediatric diabetes care. To find out more about this work, check out the episode show notes or visit our website at nhpqi.ca/podcast. But until next time, it's goodbye from us here at QualityCast North. I'm Sher Chewy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycons@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.